Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Let's take this outside with Marianne Iveson, the podcast where she speaks to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about why they connect with nature.
Michael Bennett is a ski and cycling enthusiast and owner of Eurosports in Ottawa, Ontario. Michael founded Eurosports in 2004 after spending his youth working in outdoor stores in Huntsville and Ottawa and his parents' ski shop in Muskoka. Eurosports is your multi-sport lifestyle shop where every staff member fully indulges in the outdoor lifestyle. From cycling and trail running in the summer to cross-country skiing, ski-mo, and running in the winter months, they have you covered for all seasons. Enjoy my nerdy cross-country ski chat with Michael Bennett. This is my very first live in-person interview inside of, this is so appropriate, inside of Eurosports. It's inside of a ski, bike, what else do you do in here?
Ski-mo, trail running, snowshoe running, and not any form of cycling, pretty much.
Welcome to Let's Take This Outside.
Thank you. I'm glad that you're the first, and this is our first time I've had a first place in a while, so that's good.
You know what's great is we have so many connections. We didn't actually meet till maybe a couple months ago, but Liam Walk, who is a former guest on this podcast, works here. He is your manager, and it just all kind of ties in and makes sense. So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, we headhunted him pretty hard. So it's been a long process to get him here, and it's been well worth the wait.
What was it about Liam? Let's just like go on a Liam love fest for a second. What was it about Liam that you...
Oh, definitely his smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No. Honestly, it was, we probably met 7 or 8 years ago, actually through Nordic skiing when he was instructing at Mooney's Bay and sort of building his, I guess you could say, lessons business and whatnot. So we kind of, you know, did some work with him, with Rosignol, sort of help him out with gear. And at the time, we just, our ski business was growing. It's a very traditional style of business, so it takes a while for the clubs to kind of wake up to the fact that you know what you're doing. So over time, it was just a matter of keeping in touch. And, you know, he did work in a couple other retailers and whatnot, but I think he really wanted to work in a place that definitely was Nordic focused. And then his other big passion is trail running. So about 2 years ago now, I gave him a call and said, hey, listen, you know, we definitely need somebody. And myself, I was trail running a lot, but we wanted to actually make that part of our business. And we basically said, hey, you know, you've got carte blanche on how you want to build the trail running side of our business. And, you know, again, through clubs and through his own business, his coaching and whatnot. And it worked out great. So yeah, the rest is history. And hopefully he stays around for a long time.
I hope so too. And there's a few other connections here that makes it a small world. So Exact Nutrition, who has also been a guest, you carry Exact, you know the guys there who are amazing, you know, Lawrence and Alistair. They're wonderful. They're like very passionate about what they do.
They had me at It Doesn't Freeze.
It's my favorite. Yeah. It's my favorite part of...
Yeah, you can't be a Nordic skier and not run into the odd chip tooth trying to bite into a frozen cliff bar. So basically when they came in, I met them many, many, many moons ago, actually. I think at the World Duathlon Championships when it was here, not participating, obviously. Lawrence came by the booth and we swapped some Exact bars for a pair of Innovate trail shoes.
How many
the rest is history. Just one box. They were on sale. They were an older color. So after that, yeah, we started selling the bars. Great company to work with. They tend to focus on specialty shops. They very, very big advocates in terms of sponsoring events. They help us with events that we co-sponsor, like the Gravel Cups. Most of the events were associated with the Ski Nook series, which is roller skiing, trail running, mm-hmm. mountain biking, and obviously cross country. So they're always at Quebec Mega Trail every year. I mean, that's just to name a few. I think they're pretty much everywhere. It's the trail and Nordic community. It's like the bar to go to.
The reason I ended up coming here and us partnering up was because I was looking for Norda shoes. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I have been asking Norda. If you don't know who Norda is, they are a trail running shoe company. It's out of Quebec, right?
Yep.
I've been trying to get them on the podcast for forever.
Yeah. Nick, are you listening?
Yeah. So this is my, if you don't mind giving like a call to Nick and say he should
should probably do this. I would really like that. So they're very busy.
That was Liam's first big, I would say, accomplishment was, you know, when he came in to start the trail running business, you know, we kind of went the traditional route with La Sportiva, Innovate. These are, you know, staple brands that we knew. Both of us had heard about Norda, and it was just one of those things where, like, how do we get in touch with them? So the owner was, like, you're actually talking to the owner, which is great. This is something that, you know, people are used to when they come in here. To me, you're talking to a guy that literally created a brand, and then he's still running it is pretty neat. So we reached out to them. We got in a couple of size runs within a couple weeks. I know Liam did numerous races. I did my first Harry Canal with them, like, a week after buying the shoes and having apparently cracked kneecap while running it. So yeah, it's a great company to work with. And again, you know, we're known for taking on what I would call smaller brands that might be considered high risk, but a brand like that, I mean, it's such a game changer in the trail industry right now. You know, it's been very valuable for us to work with them. Everybody that's got them has been super thrilled. I mean, it's the only running shoe that lasts 1,500K right now. It's insane. So it's also nice just to kind of watch them grow. But they've been very loyal. Like, they're with us exclusively. They're not diving into the kind of like mass market right now. They don't really have that intention to. So, you know, it's nice to be able to work with companies like that.
Even in the last few minutes, you are showing your expertise. But where does your outdoor expertise and outdoor love stem from and start?
I will try to keep this as short as possible. I don't come from a wintry part of the country. I was born in Windsor, where winter lasts about 8 to 9 minutes, I think. Yeah. Without getting too personal, my parents are separated. So when I moved in with my dad at age 12, he had taken a job in Parry Sound, which is, if you don't know the area, it's kind of on the cusp of Georgian Bay. It's about 6,500 people, might be a little more than that now. There are two things to do there in the winter. There is snowmobile and there is a Nordic ski club, which has probably about 100 to 150 members at the time. Really good jackrabbit program. So when I moved there when I was 12, we didn't have the money for a snowmobile. So skis is what it was. And it was a great community to be around. And I think I did my first lop at, it was like a 7.5K. I think I finished second or third last the first day and dead last the second day. And then, you know, the next year I was just hooked and I started racing. And I've yet to win the damn thing. Been trying for 30 years. But yeah, that's where the Nordic side of it got hooked. And then everything else just fell into place because what do you do in the summer? You bike, you run, you swim. And that kind of got tied in from there. But that club was quite a catalyst for me to getting into it. And I was always nerded out on the technical side of it. Like, my parents would go to these like sort of long drawn out dinners with other social workers, which wasn't all that interesting for me. So I would literally like sit in a corner and draw ski boots and draw skis or write out inventory lists of the brands I wanted in my store. I was just kind of dorky that way. I didn't think it would get me, you know, to age 47 running a shop, but here we are. So
it's funny that you bring up Windsor because I grew up in Tilbury, which is like just down the 401.
Yep.
And I was always an athletic kid, but I didn't actually start my like outdoor love until actually I visited my sister. She lived in Canmore, Alberta for years, fell in love with the mountains. And then I moved to Ottawa about 10 years ago, started hiking. That turned into trail running. That turned into buying a bike. That turned into buying Nordic skis. And there's something about, I always have a love fest about Ottawa and Gatineau Park on this podcast, but there's something about this area, and I think there's only a few areas like this in Canada, that you can literally do anything year round. It's funny how like not until like my 30s I would really, really got into it, right?
I've lived here actually 3 times. So the the connection is that my grandfather is actually from Ottawa, so or not originally, but lived here for as long as I could remember. So my dad and I would come here periodically ever since I was a little kid. But initially we were coming here because of the Gatineau Lobbit. So I think I was 13 when I did my first one. And that was the back when they had like the 25K. So for a 13-year-old kid, racing that distance is a little unusual, but I sucked at sprints. So I would go do the longer stuff. But I moved here actually when I was 18 to work at Pecos because I was like, oh, I need to work in a bike and ski shop and gain experience. I had already been working in a local one in Huntsville when we lived there. And it was just one of those cities that you're like, you can't not do sports if you live here. So I ended up moving away to go to Europe to race bikes, came back, set up a ski shop with my parents in Muskoka for 7 years, but still managed to come to Ottawa in the summers to work and kind of try different things. And eventually just in 2004, it was like, okay, time to grow up. You're 30 years old. And then just focus on the shop. So that's how Eurosport started, in a basement in the market. And, you know, here we are, I think almost, it's what's going to be 20 years. It's 18 years now. So
I think you kind of already answered this question, but why do you love cross-country skiing? I think you answered this sort of, but now to this day, like I'm sitting right beside about, I don't know, 200 pairs of skis.
Yeah, about that. Maybe more.
Maybe more.
Don't go in the basement. There's another pile.
I instantly fell in love with cross-country skiing because, first of all, it's really hard, but it's also a way to combat, I don't want to say depression, but like the winter blues. It's a way to get outside, a way to get vitamin D, a way to move your body. I would say the majority of us are not racing. Mm-hmm. Like cross-country skiing, but why do you love it even to today?
My first experience, I hated it. So you got to remember, coming from Windsor, like there was no such thing as minus 27, minus 26. My dad took us in some trail in Parry Sound on these old wooden things with 75 mil bindings, 8 or 9K. I don't know. I was 11 or 12. I think I was just up for a weekend visit. And it was awful. And then, you know, we did the Loppet. And I think that's what's changed. Living in Windsor, I mean, I played soccer with my friends in the street. I went to a predominantly Italian Roman Catholic high school.
Shocking.
Yeah, being the British kid. But so skiing was just, endurance sports wasn't really a thing for me. So when I kind of got involved with the club, that's when things changed. Because there was a social aspect. It was huge. And then it was the first time that I had actually wanted to compete in something. And there was a girl in our club who was sort of the fastest girl, who was my age. And I remember wanting to beat her so bad in the Loppet. I don't know how old I was at this time, probably 12. I skipped the water station just so I could gain an advantage on her. And of course, she caught me with like 100 meters to go or something. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, like,
maybe if you're hydrated.
Who needs water in a 7 kilometer event? But, you know, in my head, I'm like, I'm going to plow through. And they were talking about that afterwards. So it was pretty funny. So yeah, it's always been racing, and it's one of those things, and it stems into cycling and trail running. Like, I do get the premise of going out and enjoying yourself on skis and whatnot. My pleasure is from constantly testing yourself, and, you know, even at my age, it's obviously you're getting slower. Liam's helping me get quicker at trail running for sure, but in the other sports, like, you kind of watch yourself get slower with age, but you push as much as you can. But yeah, with Nordic, it's just something about, now I do appreciate getting out there for 2, 3, 4 hours, just being by myself, you know, listening to music or a podcast while I'm skiing. And then also, it's a lot of it's just, I like testing different waxes, different skis, stuff like that. And I don't consider it work. It's just a lot of fun doing that sort of thing. So that's how it kind of stemmed from. But yeah, for sure, it's always been racing. Most of our clients obviously don't race. So you're just trying to sort of explain to them like how cool it is just to be able to go out. But you know what? With Strava, everybody's racing. Even when they're not racing, they're racing. So, and you're just challenging yourself. So that same person who just got into the sport to learn to skate ski goes from P8 to P9 and back. And they're like, the first time they did it, it took 40 minutes. And then they're down to like 28 by the end of the year, and that's a massive accomplishment. So
actually, quick embarrassing story about the Gatineau Loppet. The first time I did it, I was like 90th. The second time I did it, I think it was in the 30th or in that range. So I got better very, very fast because I loved it so much. But I think I would have done better because I remember I shouldn't have had a water pouch on for 10K, but I took a quick sip. It was in the last like fourth of the Loppet of the race, and I dropped my water bottle and I lost like probably 30 seconds trying to like grab it. So that reminded me when you said like water. I'm like, I signed up for the 10K this year. I am not bringing water with me.
No, don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, last year there were no water stations. We were literally just, I had gone out purposely training 50K skis without drinking to get ready for it. You basically just stick your hand in the snowbank and eat a chunk of snow and away you
That's
go.
That's the best.
The exact bars, wow. You shove them up your sleeve and away you go. So I had a couple of those and it worked out pretty well. So
the whole point of this podcast is to talk about cross-country skiing and people who are interested in cross-country skiing. If you're a beginner, it sounds probably pretty intimidating. Where do you start when it comes to, no matter where you live in Canada, how do you get cross-country skis? What are you looking for? Make it as easy as possible for people, slash, like, you know, where do you ski? Where do you start?
I think that the first thing is, you know, why are you doing it? So obviously during the pandemic, everybody went crazy. You had people coming in that like literally couch to skis kind of thing, as we're, you know, majority of our clientele are usually doing other sports, cycling, running, triathlon, whatever. probably the biggest thing now is that there's a lot of barriers that have been broken down with new equipment. So when skins came out for classic skis.
What does that mean?
What so is that? What that is it's a form of waxless that actually works. So before that, there was these things they called fish scaler, en français écaille poisson. And these things would literally just work around the zero conditions. They would drag. They would make a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. You would get grip when everybody else was having trouble with their wax. The skin skis have sort of have a much broader range of grip. And what it's done now is that person that's just moved to Ottawa that's like, oh, I'd be like to get outside, but I live in a one-bedroom apartment. I don't want to, you know, set up my apartment as a waxing station.
I'm that person. I am that person.
Exactly.
100%.
So, and that's a good chunk of the city, right? So you can go into a shop like ours and we can walk you through what your athletic background is, or if you have none at all, it doesn't really matter. You pick the ski based on the person's ability and, you know, weight and all these other things, and then go from there. But now you're pretty much buying your ski package, getting maybe one tube of a liquid wax to rub on the ski, wait 10 minutes, brush it off, and that's it. You're good for the day. And one little tube will last you maybe two seasons, three seasons, depending on how you go. So that broke down a lot of barriers. In fact, it was to the point where if I look at our ski wall now, it's about, you know, 60 to 70% classic skis. As were pre-skin ski, it was predominant, people were coming in grabbing skate skis. Skate skiing for somebody who's brand new to the sport is very intimidating. Because you see people that are good at it, and it's like they're literally cruising at, you know, 15 to 21K an hour, and it looks effortless, kind of like somebody, you know, in a swimming pool that's very technique-based. And so is classic, don't get me wrong, in fact, even more so. But the fact that, you know, you can go out, you can get a skin ski, if it's cambered correctly, you get good glide, good grip, and, you know, that makes all the difference in the world. If there is a drawback to skin skis, it's you can't just go into a place and just buy them off the shelf. You cannot do a traditional paper test with them. You can't even really do a clamp test with them. They have to be done basically with a machine like what we have, because the sensor runs along the side of the skin, which doesn't interfere with the camber. And believe me, a skin ski can be a horrible experience if it's just bought based on the weight range that it says on the ski. So this is something that, like, a shop like ours is very, very, very particular about, making sure that the person that comes in, if they're a neophyte and they're 140 pounds, you know, we dial the ski in for someone like that, which is why there's 300, 400 pairs of skis in the store, because you can't just pull something off the wall and go, well, this says it's good for 110 to 160 pounds, off you go. Guaranteed it won't work. So you really need to actually test that ski properly for someone and explain to them why you're doing it. So, yeah.
So to make it simple for people, let's say you want a classic ski, you want to try it out. Skin skis are probably the way to go.
Especially for sure.
Because I don't have room in my place whatsoever. But also, I don't want to mess with wax. So what happens is in the middle of the ski, usually you'd have to wax that and adjust it. So now is it a material or what is the skin?
Yeah, it's the good stuff is usually made with mohair, basically, because it's, you know, somewhat waterproof, grips really well, lasts a long time, glides really well, and you can wax it and brush it out. So it's not new technology. In ski mountaineering, they've been using skins since, well, that was downhill skiing before chairlifts ruined it. And so they basically took that, shrunk it down, shoved it under the foot, and then basically put it in a place that it sits inside the camber of the ski. So again, when you're off the skin, you've got good glide. So that's the key thing, is that, you know, just going out and just getting a ski based on, God forbid, height or something like that, or just going, oh, well, the ski says it's this weight range, you know, you're probably not going to get very good grip or very good glide unless it's checked. And like I said, it's not something you can do a paper test with. So basically having that stuff under there, it's all the grip you need. And we're seeing now that a lot of people are using them, even racers are using them for training skis, because it's just convenient. You can just run out the door and go. Like, we're, what, 30, 40 meters from the Kitchissippi Trail on the side of the river. So sometimes after work, if I only have like an hour, I can just run down there literally in my ski boots, slap them on, and go back and forth for 15K or something like that.
Something I was thinking about as we're talking is the difference between classic and skate. And I have my own opinions on it, but maybe you can help me with this. But classic, you have more backcountry options. You have more skiing options usually. I don't know about all the clubs across Canada or the US or wherever that is, but I know here you have more skiing options with classic, correct?
Yes. It's also, if there's an expression in skiing that classic, it takes a day to learn and a lifetime to master, and skating's the other way around. So, I mean, both sports are very technical. But you can literally just go out and walk on your skis if you want to. The goal should be to get to the point where you're getting glide. I mean, the enjoyment is from being able to move efficiently as possible, right? So, but with Classic, again, like if you think about, like the Kitchissippi, for me anyway, personally, it's there's a lot of narrower sections. It's just nicer just to do Classic on it. They do have these little skate sections that work it well. Britannia Winter Trail is another really good one. I would think they've got another one in Orleans now. But with Classic, you can pretty much go anywhere. There's no such thing really as a dedicated skate trail. The only drawback to Classic is this time of year when you're looking at man-made snow. So if you go to the Knacker track out in Cantley, you will be predominantly skating first because it doesn't require as much base because you obviously don't have to put grooves in the snow. Mm-hmm. So, but for most people, it kind of depends where they're coming from. If you're coming to this sport and you're like, I don't know what I want to do and I don't really do a lot of other sports, Classic is great. If you want to take them to the cottage and go boot around on the lake, sure. Again, different kind of ski, but still that would be the technique that would make the most sense. Mm-hmm. When we get people coming in for like competitive cyclists or even just what I would call like active fit, mm-hmm. cyclists, triathletes, whatever, they tend to drift towards skating because I think they just like the whole Lycra thing and whatnot. So having said that, you should still wear Lycra when you're Classic skiing as well. You don't have to, but yeah.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.
Let's take this outside with Marianne Iveson.
Say you've been skiing for a while. What are some things to upgrade or be a better skier? I think, you know, it depends on your budget and want it to be accessible for everyone. But if you can find a good coach, if you can find someone, so I would love to know, like, how do you upgrade? How do you become faster? How do you become a better skier?
The equipment does make a massive difference when you're at the competitive end. And when I say massive, like 8 to 10% is actually massive. But technique is pretty much everything in this sport, both skating and Classic. There are a lot of incredibly strong cyclists out there that have taken up skate skiing, and they are literally brutal to watch, but they're fast because they have a big engine.
I know.
So, you know, I mean, one of my close friends is, he's, you know, probably one of the top masters in the country in road cycling. And, you know, we ski together and, yeah, I mean, he can drop me easily. I've been skiing my whole life, but it's like a frog on a hot plate. It's just a really unusual looking technique.
So imagine he dialed in his...
Yeah, he would go significantly faster, and he's already fast. So, and you do see that. So, I mean, it is something that, I mean, the refinement of the technique makes a massive difference. I still spend time with Liam, with Dave McMahon, people that I know that are better technicians than I am, because also the techniques have changed a bit over the years. You know, when I started, we used to offset everywhere in races, and now everybody one skates, as an example, which is where you pull every time you skate. Classic is completely changed. Most of them are double pulling around everywhere, and they're literally only diagonal striding when going up an incline of a certain gradient. So where we used to diagonal stride everywhere. So the techniques have definitely changed. For the rec skier, I would say for classic, yeah, still focus on diagonal stride. It's the most efficient one, and it's actually more enjoyable than just poling around sort of thing. So,
and when I started, I remember too, and I maybe this isn't the best idea, but like if you just want to learn a little bit, like there's so many YouTube videos about about technique.
But there's nothing beats one-on-one. I know during the pandemic it was really hard because there were so many people taking up skiing, and it was also almost like a cultural shift. I remember going down the Kitchissippi one night, and I passed these three dudes wearing like Senators jerseys that obviously had just gotten into Nordic, and they were literally having an argument between skin skis versus fish scales. And I'm like, okay, this is the kind of thing you would hear maybe in Trondheim in Norway, not in Canada. You'd think they'd be discussing about like last week's loss or something from the Sens. So it was like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. So it was nice to see progress in that direction. So
you've mentioned your shop a couple times, but I want to know a little bit more about, obviously you have a long history of selling people outdoor gear, but Eurosport specifically, you said around 20 years, right? And so what does it look like now? And what do you specialize in other than?
The general rule of thumb here is if you walk in the shop, everybody that you talk to is not just an active participant in the sports we sell, but is probably competing. Actually, everybody has now come to think of it. So we would never get into something just to make money. If tomorrow downhill skiing was the biggest thing, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It's not my specialty. I don't have any interest in anything that involves chair lifts. And it's something I'm not passionate about. So why do it? When it comes to, you know, Nordic, I've been racing off and on since I was a kid. We're involved with most of the race clubs in town in some sort of sponsorship venue or whatever. And it's the same, like we got into ski mountaineering strictly. Again, this is Nathan's side project. So it's kind of how Liam took the trail running on. You know, Nathan got into the Skimo, and then, you know, we got a little bit of it. And then last year I did my first actual Skimo race thinking, okay, I've got cross country lungs, I got a kick at. Can I say that word? No.
Kick ass?
Yes.
we'll put explicit okay. on the explicit.
That didn't pan out, but it was a really good learning experience. But it is something that, you know, spending quite a lot of time on the different skis and testing things out, you know, gives us the knowledge base nobody else has. Plus, we focus on the lightweight stuff anyway. I mean, the heavy stuff for ski mountaineering is kind of useless around this area. The lightweight stuff is far more enjoyable. You can go to Mont-Saint-Marie, you can go to Tremblant. There's rumors that there's a new place that's going to be allowing it this year, which is much closer, so I won't get into that. So it is something that's taken off.
Liam mentioned this before too in the podcast. What is Skimo?
There's two facets. So there's what they call alpine touring, which is basically take your downhill equipment. It's basically a binding that releases from the heel that allows you to walk up the hill on your skis. So that stuff weighs a ton. It's pretty much downhill equipment, marginally lighter. And it's designed for, you know, going out west and going up the Powder Mountains and into places like what they call backcountry, where you don't really have access either by a chairlift or, you know, maybe helicopter or something like that. Skimo is a little bit different. It's definitely much more European in origins. So the equipment weighs about half of what your average alpine ski does. As an example, my racing Kesleys are probably about 50 grams heavier than my skate skis. So it shows you how light this stuff is. And they are designed to basically march uphill at high speed. But then coming down, you know, obviously you don't have the super locked in stability that you would from like a pure heavy alpine stuff. But it also means, you know, you kind of need to know how to ski a bit. And I think the way things have gone between like the downhill equipment, just like in mountain biking, it's just gotten to the point where it's so easy to use that the skill levels are starting to drop a bit. So with Skimo, even the fatter stuff that you can go do the shick shocks with or whatever, again, the focus is on lightweight and on getting up to the top of the hill, getting across the hill, clicking in and going down. And then you basically pull the skins off, and that's where your glides come from. So you put the skins in your backpack or in your jersey and then switch it back and forth. So it is something that Skimo East has a series in Quebec through all the major hills there. They're getting anywhere from 30 to 80 people per event. So it is growing. The pandemic launched it a lot because the chairlifts were shut down. Mm-hmm. So Mont-Saint-Marie, I've noticed there's more and more people every year going. I guess apparently they have some lift issues occasionally. So people have gotten into it by default, but it is a sector that is growing. Like I said, there are places like Trailhead, for example, focuses on the heavier stuff. Mm-hmm. We focus on the lighter stuff. Again, people coming more from cross-country to Skimo rather than, say, from alpine to Skimo.
You also have winter running stuff too.
Yes, because the runners do run year round. We would like them all to ski, but they have big events coming up in May. So we do offer spike shoes from Icebug and from Norda. So Norda being Canadian, I think that was a smart move on their part to dive right into that. So, and Icebug's been doing it forever. They're a small Swedish company that focuses predominantly on trail shoes. They're huge in the orienteering market. And so for us, yeah, they do a Gore-Tex version. So especially around here when we get all the slush and then the temp drops to minus 10, there's so much ice. It's a lifesaver. Even running on the road, if you hit a patch of black ice, you're not going to go down.
Spring and summer, what can we look forward to?
Again, our main focus has always been bikes for sure. But like I said, our trail business, trail shoe business has been quite hectic. Again, like between Liam and I and Nathan, we're at various events all year competing in. And then also even like we're sponsoring the Trail de Cologne next year. We're working on something with Natural Fitness Lab for next year and Dave McMahon. So in terms of bikes, we do tend to focus more on kind of like the performance oriented stuff. So the last few years, gravel's been a big thing. We have our own custom brand called Prologue, which has been in existence actually since 1994. It's the first company I started and still under the same name today. We also do road, cross, gravel, cross-country mountains. So again, no chairlifts, even track bikes,
that
things like
that. So hard.
It's not. Earn your turns. That's how it works. So, but when it comes down to, the bike side of business, we tend to be sort of hyper-focused on that market. We do carry other brands as well, such as, you know, Felt or Bea, some really cool niche brands like Fara from Norway, Colnago from Italy, Villiers, stuff like that. So there's definitely something for everybody. The good thing is we do have from Felt, like people that want to get into gravel riding, don't want to spend a fortune. They make a great bike around $1,600, $1,700. We do realize that the ceiling is getting higher and higher. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And it's something, you know, because we're heavily involved with a lot of junior racers with the OBC. We're trying to keep the cost down for parents when they come in and they're like, okay, my son would like to try cycling, and you throw a $7,000 bike at them. It's quite an investment. You know, the old adage was, oh, take up cycling, it's cheaper than hockey. Well, now it's not anymore. We're always trying to kind of work with the companies that we deal with, including our own company, just trying to make those barriers as minimal as possible.
Do you have any other thoughts more on cross-country skiing before you wrap this up?
Yeah, the best advice I could give to somebody is, you know, if you're not sure, there are places you can rent. 100% take a lesson, join a club, join Natural Fitness Lab, or, you know, take lessons from Liam. It's also another
one. He's my guy.
Yeah. And NFL also, like with Dave McMahon and Lise Milosh, also do lessons. Those are probably like the largest ones if you're an adult. If you're under 18, I mean, you've got Knacker Talk, you've got Kanata Nordic, Chelsea Nordic. So there's a lot of good clubs. Ski Nook is one that we've been working with closely, which actually hosts events, which is fantastic. So there's lots of options there. Definitely do not think you're gaining anything by buying used equipment. Be very careful because it is a weight-based sport. Chances are the person that is selling you the skis just wants them out of their garage. So definitely do your due diligence. Call a few shops. Make sure that they actually properly test skis. Like I said, we are the only ones that have a ski selector in North America, which is a Swedish machine that can test skin skis properly, but also find the right skis for anyone, whether they're a debutante or whether they're, you know, been going to the Olympics. And we get skis shipped here from Alberta to test for the provincial team and then ship them back. So it's like, that's one level. But that person that comes is like, I've never skied before. You deserve the exact same service. It's not just, oh, here, this will work off the wall and then kick you out the door or send you the cash register. It's not that simple. Our goal is, yeah, we want to sell skis, but we want to grow the sport. We're not going to grow the sport if you go out and hate it because the skis don't work.
I was just going to say that I think that a lot of people hate it because they have the wrong.
Exactly. And that is probably about 70%. Of people that quit skiing. Like, I have this conspiracy theory that downhill shops sell cross-country skis to sell more downhill skis. So you go in and you're like, there's those things on the side, and then they buy them and they come out and go, oh, this is hard work, and they come back and buy a $2,000 downhill package. But I know it's not true, but it's just funny to think about
starting that. Conspiracy theories. Yeah.
But it is something that, especially in classic, I mean, it's the ski has to be able to kick and it has to be able to glide, and that's 100% weight-based, and you can't just go in and pull something off a wall. Because a ski that says it's good for 140 to 180 pounds. Basically what that's saying is that the 140 pound person has to be an elite athlete, and the 180 pound person basically has to have never skied before a day in their life. most places just go, well, you're in the range, off you go. So if the ski's too stiff, you won't get any grip. So you come to the first hill, you start slipping. Then the first thought is, oh, I don't know how to ski. The skis end up in the garage or on Kijiji, and then you're back doing whatever you're doing before. The way we do it with testing and whatnot, we leave the door open for, I would say, inconsistencies. You know, we had a client a few years ago, bought a super high-end ski because everything he owns is high-end. And he's like, I can't get grip. I can't grip grip. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. The testing shows you should. So he said he had been skiing for years, gave him a softer pair, came back, still couldn't get grip. I'm like, all right, this is odd. Let's go skiing together. He loves high-end stuff. He was just basically walking on the skis. So we had to find him a super high-end ski that was soft enough that he could actually compress. And he loves it. It works.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
He gets glide, yeah. Gets grip. But he really wanted a World Cup ski. So sometimes, you know, you have to kind of work with that as well. So, and the door is very, very wide open, like in terms of our policy, because we have the testing machine, we can really pinpoint it. We can ship skis all over the country that are going to be bang on accurate for people because of that. And this is stuff that you can't get from a paper test or a crank machine or a, you know, they're just not accurate enough.
How do people find out more? How do people get more of your expertise, call you, message you?
Yeah, calling, email right now. We are quietly in the works of making like what we would call science of skiing videos. It's just we've been so busy. And this
is good.
Yeah, which is good. Like I've been writing scripts basically about how to choose skis predominantly. And then also like little, not necessarily technique tips, but this will be something we'll be working with Natural Fitness Lab and Liam, of course, about stuff like that. But also it's not just going to be focused on, again, buying the best skis to go to the Olympics with. There'll be a fair amount of that, but we want people that want to come to the sport and not assume that that's their end goal. Mm. They just want to go out in the bush and have fun. Again, if the skis don't work, you're not going to have any fun. Right. So there's got to be a certain amount of information out there. And there just isn't. Like you go on YouTube and it's like most of it's really antiquated or it's wrong. And then let's not even get into the influencers. I mean, it's just, that's a whole other pile of bad advice blowing around. So
website?
Website. But by all means, like call us if you have questions and email us if you have questions. We're happy to get as nerdy as you want, you know, within reason of what's required. So like we literally on a regular basis will get an email saying I'm looking for, you know, a skate ski for powder conditions, generally minus 10 to minus 20, and I'm 160 pound master racer. We'll find that ski for that person. We'll have to go through 15 pair to do it, but we'll do it. It's not an off the wall kind of like, yeah, this will work kind of thing. So, and that's the same for, it's like, I'm new to skiing. What should I do? You find out their sporting background and kind of other things that they want to work with. We had a guy in here last week that's got a bit of a degenerative issue in his legs. So he wanted the classic. We put him on BC boots because they were super stable and they kept him upright and then still managed to get him on a decent ski that worked out well for him. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that you have to understand the sport and you have to understand your client really well. And because like if somebody comes in here and says, well, what is this ski like? I know because I've tried it. And so is all the staff as we're, you know, that seems to have been lost a bit over the years. So we can tell you what every boot is going to feel like because we've used it and what every ski is going to feel like and what conditions because we've used it. Mm-hmm. And when you ski 5 days a week, there's so much opportunity to try different things.
Thank you for being my Nordic expert.
No worries.
Michael, thank you for joining me.
Well,
let's
like
take this outside.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. For more Let's Take This Outside, go to letstakethisoutside.ca.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.